Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. My name's Erin and I'm a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, birth activist and all-round birth geek. In this podcast, I chat to experts in the field of pregnancy and birth, debunking myths around birth, diving into the research around maternity care and exploring what is it that means you're more likely to have a positive birthing experience. If you enjoy this podcast, do feel free to buy me a coffee and fund my caffeine habit. Link to my Buy Me a Coffee page is in the podcast info. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. Today I'm speaking to the very fabulous Abigail Lateef, who is a midwife of 14 years in the NHS. She's worked in community, MLC and at home, and she resigned from the NHS in 2022 to work independently. Welcome, Abby. I'm really pleased to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I'm very, very honoured.
I've been following you on Instagram for a while, and I really wanted to get you on because I found it really interesting, you know, all your lives and all of your posts that you were putting on Instagram when you were still in the NHS, kind of leading up to you handing in your resignation and leaving that role. And I really wanted to get kind of your side, your story on why, you know, what your experiences were working in the NHS and why you decided to leave. So do you want to just start off giving us a little bit of background on you and your career, and you can kind of move on to why you decided to hand in your resignation?
Yeah, sure. So this is a bit I find quite difficult talking about yourself, like your career, but yeah, I'll give it a good go. So I'm a midwife from Manchester, and I'm a wife and a mother of three. And so I've been a midwife for 10 years now, but within the NHS for 14 years. So I've always worked in the same trust. I've always been either a community midwife or a birth centre midwife. So I've always supported women either on a birth centre setting or in a home birth setting. And those are my skills. So I've never worked as a rotational midwife. I've never worked on the, you know, the what we call the wards. I've always worked in between those two areas. So I was really fortunate to start my career in the community in what is known now as a continuity of care team. But back then it was just a team that supported women at home, and I was super fortunate to be introduced into that team as a band five. So from then on, I carried on my career as community, and then at times I moved into the birth centre. Sometimes it was just due to my family circumstances and not being able to fulfil the on-calls, and sometimes it was just by choice. What else? So in 2021, I launched my own business. It was something that I always had in my mind that I would want to do, something outside of the NHS, but I didn't really know what that looked like. I would say about 8 years ago, that's when I had the idea for it. So it's taken a long time to sort of come into fruition. And I opened that in 2021, and it's called Maternal Matters, and I provide hypnobirthing and education like yourself, and I also sort of support other maternal companies to do their thing there as well, such as like baby yoga, and I work with some magnificent doulas and just women that support women, really. So it's all things maternal, and and then we'll come on to that in a minute, but I resigned from the NHS last year, and something that I never imagined that I would do. And from that, a lot of things are happening now, and a lot of, you know, some really big changes in my personal life, but also my professional life as well. So
it's probably something that a lot of midwives don't anticipate, I think, you know, having to consider leaving the NHS and leaving the career that you've worked so hard for and you've studied so long for, because it's a really big decision, isn't it, to decide to step away from that? Because I think most midwives who go into that profession, you have a passion for that career. Mm-hmm. You have to have a passion to do the work that you do. So, you know, what was it that kind of, was it a gradual thing where you started questioning things, or was there a specific thing that kind of made you think, no, that's the final straw, I'm going to have to step away? What kind of drove you to decide to leave the NHS?
Yeah, so it's very, very hard for me to pinpoint. And, you know, going back to what you were saying about, you know, finding it hard, it's definitely been a very difficult decision. It's not something that just happens suddenly. But I do some, you know, probably up until recently, and even now, you know, I can sort of feel it in my chest that I do find it difficult to talk about. And at times it can still be really emotional. And I don't know whether that I'll move beyond that, and maybe it's just something I'm still coming to terms with. But I would probably say for the last couple of years, I've been questioning everything. And I think I was thinking about this today, obviously knowing that I was going to talk to you, that when did I start questioning everything? I think I've always questioned the way that women are cared for and the way that we can support them, and the way that policies heavily restrict the things that we do, the way that time governs everything that we do. I've always been that type of midwife. And that's because of the way that I was raised, really, right from the beginning, in those type of teams that were very woman-centered, and that I worked the way that I always wanted to work. You know, it didn't last forever, but at least I was able to experience that. So I think naturally I was always that type of midwife. But significantly in the last couple of years, I think when I launched Maternal Matters, and then I started to delve more into Instagram actually, and follow people like yourself, like you said, you've been following me, I've been following you from a long time ago, and I think just exploring different platforms and following educators and doulas and you know, really kind of spiritual midwifery, that has made me question a lot more things. And so before I even, you know, way before I left, I was starting to think, I don't know if I can see a future in the NHS, but I didn't really know what that looked like, except from having Maternal Matters and thinking, what can I do with that? But even then, when I launched that, I didn't imagine I was going to leave. I just felt like I was really fortunate to have Maternal Matters on the side to give me that satisfaction of being able to practice in a way that I always want to practice. But I always thought I would just keep my hand in the NHS, because I felt it was important to have that experience of working in the NHS while supporting women out of it. And then I guess as things sort of evolved and I wasn't supported to work in the way that I wanted to work, that was the catalyst really of me leaving. So do you want me to delve into that?
Yeah,
I'm kind of losing your question a little bit now.
You're happy to. I mean, it's a common theme that I hear from a lot of midwives, either ones that are already, you know, or still working in the NHS, or have left, because I do get lots of DMs from midwives and student midwives actually.
I know.
Breaking, you know, they haven't even really started their career and they're already feeling that feeling of being restricted and not being able to support people effectively or the way that they think is right. So yeah, if you could like explain a little bit about the kind of, you know, situation, maybe some of the examples of things that kind of maybe made you question you know, the career that you had in the NHS.
Because the thing is, working within the NHS, you know, it's really hard to pinpoint it, because it's such a huge topic, isn't it? But I would say that within the NHS, you're not supported to be a holistic midwife. You know, I'm not saying fundamentally across the UK. I realise that there are small pockets of really good examples. And I know that I've experienced that at my trust. It is a long time ago. But it is very rare. So I feel like the type of midwife that I am, I always felt, like I say, especially in the last couple of years when I've thought about leaving, that I don't really belong there. And I know that a lot of midwives, you know, that I've come across on Instagram as well, and a couple of my colleagues feel the same. Because when you are a holistic midwife who really does want to support women's choice, you're not respected very well. And you kind of, you know, the names that you'll be kind of referred to might be that you're a fluffy midwife or you're a radical midwife, you know. So you're constantly fighting this battle. And it wasn't until, like I say, I started exploring work outside the NHS is that, you know, you're constantly fighting that medical model, and it's an ongoing battle, and it just becomes exhausting. Yeah. And there's so many examples. It's, you know, the examples are giving true informed choice, which, you know, is difficult in your job, but in our job, it's extremely difficult. You can be, what's the word? You can be silenced. You know, you can feel that if you really do speak out to women and families and tell them both sides of the stories, you could be penalised. You could be, I wouldn't say disciplined, but, you know, certainly someone might have a word with you. So you've just constantly got that kind of moral dilemma that you want to be that type of midwife. You want to practice in that way, but you know, if you're truthful, then it's going to come back on you. And then you are raised in this culture to believe that, you know, families come first. And, you know, there's posters up all around hospitals saying, you know, we support your choice. And but actually, the reality is very, very different.
Mm. It's interesting because when I interviewed Dr. Claire Feely,
mm-hmm.
my research and her new book, you know, it was a lot about exactly that. You know, one of her studies was looking at midwives and their experiences of supporting choice and supporting autonomy and physiological birth. And a lot of those midwives who did that well felt completely outcast or...
Yeah, I listened to that. Yeah, I've listened to that.
The black sheep, you know?
That's right, yeah.
And I imagine that must be, you know, a huge drain on your own mental health when you're not being supported to do what you inherently know is right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you say, the NHS plays this lip service of supporting choice and supporting, you know, informed choice in physiology. But you and I both know that the policy guidelines don't do that, and they're becoming ever more restrictive, aren't they? Like,
that's right.
Seeing over the course of your career a shift in terms of guidelines.
Mm-hmm. It's true, and it's super frustrating. And, you know, when you're a student midwife, you know, you're taught all these things, like being autonomous. You're an autonomous practitioner, but actually you're not, you know. And true autonomy, I believe now, cannot be practiced in the NHS. You may have some of it if you're very fortunate to be in certain teams. And I know, like I say, going back to the beginning of my career, when I was in that team, you know, that was the best part of my career, because I worked with like-minded midwives. We were very well supported because we had a senior midwife that had been there forever, and she'd always worked that way. So she was very well respected because of that. And we had a matron at that time that was, you know, a matron of many years as well, and very supportive of women's choice. But she was fierce as well. Do you know, she really fought them battles well, and that made us have the confidence in being able to practice like that. But as soon as those things come to an end, because everything comes to an end, then things change. And you know, there are many reasons. You can sort of blame new policies that come in and what have you, but really it's that culture that you're working within. I really do think that plays heavily on the way that you're able to practice.
Yeah. And you know, when we think about the student midwives, you know, if they're starting their career and they don't get that amazing head start that you then what hope do we have, because they're going into that very medicalized environment? And I hear it from students because I speak to them all the time.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah. And I do. And, you know, that's one thing that I have spoken out about, and I do really care about the students' experience, and I love working with students. That's one thing that I do miss already, that I don't get to work with students very often, and I do love to teach. And the fact is that I am very fortunate because I've experienced that type of midwifery, and I've worked with women at home where, you know, the things that I've seen are just truly incredible. And the experience of working with those really, you know, those just that them spiritual midwives that have influenced me, they're perhaps not going to see that in their career. And quite often I'll work with students that have, I mean, I worked with one yesterday, for example. She's a newly qualified midwife, and she had never seen Wait for White. She saw her first physiological third stage, and I've worked with ones that have qualified without seeing water birth. And to me, that just blows my mind. Yeah. I can't believe that this is happening. You know, it makes me really sad. But at the same time, like yesterday, I went away and I felt really grateful that she was able to witness some things, and I hope that she gets to see more of that. But the reality is that some of them are not even fulfilling birth centre placements, never mind seeing a home birth. So,
and it's an issue, isn't it? Because how can somebody support confidently physiological birth if all they've ever seen is a medical birth full of medical intervention?
Yeah, well, they can't is the simple answer, because they might want to, and they do, some of them in the heart, like they really want to be able to facilitate that, but they can't do it confidently. You know, they're scared, absolutely. And you can see that fear. You can see that fear when you're working with somebody.
Yeah, it is. It's heartbreaking, because we're creating this, it's almost this bubble of, you know, this perfect storm of medicalized births, because we're losing people like you who are holistic and who are, you know, confident and skilled in supporting physiological birth, and you're all leaving. And I'm not saying, you know, there's no judgment there. I mean, I don't blame you for believing the NHS, but we're losing a lot of good midwives who are going into independent practice or completely changing their career. And then, you know, the training that the student midwives are getting is not giving them that full range of experience. And then they're joining the NHS then as newly qualified midwives.
That's right.
Into that medicalized environment. And I do feel like it's something that pregnant people need to be aware of. You know, they really need to have their eyes open and understand what kind of environment, what situation they're putting themselves in when they step inside a hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, I bang on about home birth all the time, and the, you know, the importance of getting doulas or getting an independent midwife. But I think a lot of people just aren't aware of the quite frankly, the risks of birthing in hospital, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, there's been a huge thing recently that I'm really passionate about, where birth centres are closing, and you and I know it's being covered up, and the trusts across the UK are not being transparent about it. And the fact is that, you know, because of that dishonesty, women, and I've seen this locally where I live as well, they'll be told it's open. So then they might question, well, is it open all the time? Yes, it is. When I know full well, if it is open, there might not be any staff there. Yeah. So then they go in and then they're told, well, we'll find a midwife for you. And the midwife will come to the birth centre. But I know as well that that midwife may have never worked on a birth centre and, like we've just said, has never supported physiological birth. So, yeah, you might be on the birth centre, but it really does matter who's looking after you as well. And it's not that midwife's fault, because it's just all a vicious circle. She's not been exposed to that birth centre. She's never worked without a CTG. So how do we expect her to be confident and, you know, give confidence to that family as well? So everyone's been harmed by it, everybody. And I am fortunate that I've been able to leave. There's a lot of midwives that want to practice like that, and they just can't. And there are other midwives that become institutionalized, and that, you know, they're okay with that. There are other midwives that enjoy the medical side of it, and again, that's okay, because we need medicalized midwives, because without them, the way things are anyway, I mean, those are the midwives that you want when things are not going very well. And we know that things are not going very well quite often at the minute. So, you know, but like you say, it's just, I feel like we're becoming, true midwifery is becoming extinct. And I know it sounds really, really negative. It's becoming extinct in the NHS, but I think there's a revolution happening outside of the NHS. But
yeah, definitely. And I definitely agree with that. And you're part of that revolution, right? Because you've been working with March of Midwives campaign, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about what that is and what you've been, how you've been involved in that campaign.
Yeah, that so that came about by accident, really. So I heard about the movement. I can't even remember how I came across it now. It just seems like I've always been involved in it. I kind of saw the movement and I thought, I want to get involved in that. Actually, that was it. It was a friend and a colleague of mine that I worked with years ago. And she was sort of asking for like local support. Do you remember how they wanted like local vigils, as many as possible? So I got involved with a couple of friends, and then we sort of took on Manchester. But before that, we started meeting each other, and then we just kind of kept pulling in more friends that we were acquainted with, and it just kind of grew from there. And by that point, there was probably about 10 of us in the Manchester vigil. And when we organised Manchester in 21, in November 21, on the first March for Midwives, it was massive. It was one of the biggest across the UK. So we were all buzzing about that. You know, we didn't expect it. We kind of thought, oh God, if a few people turn up, then what's the worst that can happen? But actually, I think we were estimated around 400 people in Manchester. So yeah, it just grew from there. And then I got to know the main organisers that are doulas. You know some of them. And yeah, and then after a while, it all went a little bit silent. And I think at one point we were really pumped and we thought, you know what, we're going to get some results from this. But then actually, things got worse, I would say, after the first march. And we saw more midwives leaving. And we all got very deflated and more frustrated and didn't really know where to turn, and it all went quiet for a while. And then the next phase came along, and that's when I got more involved in the main organizing group. And yeah, and then we went ahead with a second one, and it's really very much ongoing. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the main group in London are always working behind the scenes, but because Manchester, because we've grown and we're a really strong group, we're doing work behind the scenes as well, which is really exciting. And we're all local, like we all know each other. So I think there's about 10 of us, and we all meet in Maternal Matters like every couple of months. And it's just wonderful, to be honest. They're like my midwifery sisters, and I feel like I probably wouldn't have got through the last 12 months without them, you know. So yeah, I'm really grateful for that. And that's really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And I guess I never realized how political and how much of a feminist I am in, you know, until now, really.
So what's the campaign petitioning for? Like, what are the demands that we're holding accountable the government for?
Yeah, so there's five demands, and I think you've discussed them when you did your podcast with Maddie. Can't remember them all off the top of my head, but really we're just campaigning for better, safer maternity care for all, and for it to be more functional, and, you know, to respect midwives' autonomy, and just bring to the forefront what's happening on the inside, and just raising awareness about the shortage of midwives, because we know that the shortage of midwives has a huge impact across the services, and the less midwives there are, the more medicalized birth will be. And I mean, we're already seeing this. And it's not the top of our agenda, but the RCM, you know, have also been campaigning about the pay. Sometimes that's been a bit of, it's been difficult for us, because I know that I'm speaking for a lot of midwives. We do deserve to be paid more, but it's not at the top of our agenda. And we feel like the RCM has often pushed that, which doesn't always look great in the public eye as well, because, you know, it is up there. You know, it is important that we're paid well, because if we're paid more, then we're respected more, and, you know, less people will leave, because financially there's a lot of midwives that, and nurses, that just can't afford to do that profession anymore. But at the top of our agenda is that parents, you know, have true informed choice, and that we reduce the induction rate and the intervention rate, and that midwives can be midwives, you know, and not be constantly governed by policies, time, and you know, we just don't get to spend time with women like we used to, and we do a hell of a lot of admin.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because there's so much paperwork, there's not enough of you. So and then this impacts everything. And I talk about this all the time. If you're short on time and you're stretched, then there's not enough of you. And the guidelines and policies already don't really allow or facilitate waiting for anything, you know, waiting for you to go spontaneously into labor, or waiting for your third stage of labor, you know, the appropriate or, you know, natural amount of time. Then everything is rushed, everything is expedited, and that's a medical intervention, right?
Of course it does.
And then that creates a cascade.
It does, and it's you constantly feel that pressure, you know, that as soon as you, I mean, I still work as a bank midwife, so I still experience that, you know, and that pressure, as soon as you step into that workplace, that pressure is on you, whether you're working on a birth centre, in the community, on the postnatal ward. Everyone's under pressure in lots of different ways, and it's just constant, it's just a constant conveyor belt. And You know, the thing is, with midwives, we really need that job satisfaction because we don't go into it for the money. And we need to know that we're doing a good job. And we need to leave work thinking that at least I've done something good. You know, you have good days and bad days, don't get me wrong. But at the minute, it's quite often that you leave deflated and you feel like you've not done a good job. And, you know, morally, that really just, it really, really does affect you. You know, you think about these people, you go home, it affects the way that you behave. It affects your temperament with your family. You know, there's been many times when I've allowed it to affect me before I even go into work. I've been short-tempered with my husband, with the children. It's affected my mental health. And I feel like I'm not the kind of person that suffers with mental health, but it's definitely affected me. So imagine the people that have got things going on at home or the mental health's not great. It's just a massive cascade, really.
Yeah, it's just one big mess, isn't it? And it's actually a topic that I really want to record with Jenna, who's the psychologist at Tribe Psychology, about compassion fatigue. And, you know, because, I mean, nobody goes into that profession wanting to cause harm, and nobody intentionally, I think, is short with pregnant people, or, you know, is rude or abrupt or impatient. But we know people experience it. I hear it firsthand from people, you know, my clients or my followers. And it's the pressure. You're put under so much pressure. I think it's almost a survival instinct in some cases, where you have to kind of cut that emotional connection, because you can't, I don't think you can function long term in that kind of environment without having some kind of wall up, I think.
That's right. It is. And I do see it myself. I do see, you know, compassion fatigue. That was a term that I only learned recently, but it's completely true. I would like to say that I've not that I don't behave like that, but certainly, maybe if I stayed, I would. I do know that I've made mistakes in the past when I've reflected on my own practice, and that's because it's very hard not to, because you're so controlled. You know, unfortunately, you are controlled by the system. And I didn't even realise it was a system as well until, like I say, engaging with people like you, that I never saw it as a system, as a business. I was always so proud to work for the NHS, you know, and always so proud to tell people that I was a midwife. And but yeah, I've done a lot of soul searching, and I'm trying to unlearn a lot of things as well, because there's a lot of things that are embedded into you when you work in the NHS.
So you're going to be moving into independent midwifery, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, so at the moment I'm just sort of at the final stages of transitioning. I'm saying transitioning because, believe it or not, I've been thinking about this for years now, and I would say that for the last 18 months planning it. But even before I left the NHS, again, I never imagined that I would leave the NHS and do independent. My plan was to do a little bit of both. But I guess that wasn't meant to be. And maybe, that, you know, this is why it's all happened. I do believe that things happen for a reason. So the transition it's not easy. You know, I've had to do a lot of research, and, you know, there's a lot of feelings behind it as well. You know, there's a lot of feelings of confidence and having some fear. And your NHS is your security blanket, isn't it? It's what you've always known, and you're working in a different way. And, you know, a lot of people have said to me, you're so brave because you've actually doing that. And I guess so. Yeah, I'm just finalizing my documentation now, which has been the biggest headache, I'm not going to lie. I think all of the other things, you know, I'm confident with, but as you know, there's a lot of red tape around midwifery. So it's just making sure that all of that is in place, really. And then I shall start to do it maybe next month, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, thank you.
Amazing. And you're amazing. And
thank you. You
know, I'd love to see maybe like in a year's time, maybe we can like have another chat and see how things have progressed. And I'm confident that you're going to be feeling so happy and fulfilled with, you know, with the way that the path that your career has taken.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think I've probably been pushed in that direction. And I think that, like I said, I think things happen for a reason and it will all transpire. But just takes a lot of patience, you know, like I've learned a lot of lessons since opening Maternal Matters that things, I am kind of one of those people that I think I want everything to happen now. And life's not like that. It takes time and it takes patience. And, you know, much like when you're waiting for your baby to arrive, you've got to trust the process.
Well, I think your first clients, your first family that you support are going to be very, very lucky to have you.
Thank you.
So good luck with the independent midwifery, and I'll be following you and I'll be following your career and, you know, we'll keep chatting.
Yeah.
If anyone does want to book you, how can they find you? Where can they reach you if they're in Manchester?
Yeah. So I just want to, what I want to be known as really is like the village midwife. So I live in this fantastic community in Prestwich, Manchester. And it's just a really brilliant village. There's a lot going on, a lot of family things, but I will offer my services across Greater Manchester, but it's quite a big place. Yeah, so people can find me on my Instagram and my website, which is linked in there. I will be offering visits across Greater Manchester and hoping to work with a lot of parents locally, because that means a lot to me. I try to get involved in a lot of local community things as well. I'm training to be a tongue tie practitioner as well, so that'll be the next development with Maternal Matters, and hopefully I can offer more breastfeeding support and tongue tie divisions and that in the future. So it's very exciting.
It's exciting and it's sorely needed. I had tongue-tied baby, and I will say breastfeeding a tongue-tied baby was far more painful than giving birth. I would give birth 10 times rather than have a tongue-tied child.
Yeah, my third child was tongue-tied, but I feel like it's often ignored, isn't it? But it's usually because of the lack of training. People just, you know, pretend they've not seen it or don't refer it because it's not a problem at the time. So it's definitely something I'm really interested in.
Oh, maybe we can talk about that next time, because I'd love to hear once you finish your training.
I've got to start my placement next. I'm a bit nervous about that because there's definitely a lot more to it than I imagined, but I'll keep you updated anyway. But, you know, I'm a super fan of you as well. I've like listened to all. I'm girl fanning right now. I've listened to so many of you. Well, I've listened to all of them actually, except from the couple that you've just released. I need to catch up on them. So,
oh, thank you. Well, I'm honestly so honoured to have you on. It's been really lovely chatting to you. Let's keep in touch. And definitely, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with your future career. But you're going to be amazing, and people
are
very lucky to have you supporting them.
Thank you. And it's completely feel the same. It's an honor. I feel like I know you actually. Like, I feel like I wish we lived a bit closer. I'm sure we'd be in the same circles, wouldn't we?
I know. Oh, thank you so much for coming on, Abby.
Okay, my pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Better Birth podcast and all of its content is for educational and informational purposes only. You should consult your midwife or your doctor for anything in relation to your own pregnancy and birth. The opinions and the views of the guests on the Better Birth podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Better Birth or Erin Fung.